Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Show. I am your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and here you will find a safe space where we are discussing news you can use, self-help topics, and entertainment. I invite you to like, share, and subscribe to my channels on YouTube and bbsradio.com as it helps us to grow the channel and get much needed information out to our audiences. Now, today, we're going to be discussing estate planning, the probate process, the importance of a will, and what you really need to know before it's too late. Our guest is a seasoned attorney who has his own law firm in Tampa, Florida, and over 2 decades of experience in such matters. Attorney Clinton Paris also has the education needed to guide us in the right direction with a BS degree from the University of South Florida, a master's degree in business administration, and his Juris Doctorate was received from Stetson University College of Law in Gulfport, Florida. He has won numerous awards for outstanding achievement in his field. And let's not forget, he is also a distinguished member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. Attorney Paris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me this morning.
Yes, I wanted to get you to start by telling me why is estate planning, in your point of view, so important for individuals and families?
Well, one of the most important things that estate planning ensures is the efficient transfer of generational wealth. One of the way that American society is structured is to allow subsequent generations to gain from the efforts and things that the previous generation built and gained. And you build slowly. And so families that come into America with almost nothing, can they leave a little bit to their kids? Their kids build on that. They leave a little something to their kids. They build on that. And slowly, generation to generation, you grow generational wealth and the family advances in that manner. The estate planning, it plans that process out, because if you don't plan, in most states around the country, there's a default legal process that doesn't look out for your assets the way that you can if you put a plan in place. So it just ensures what you have and your assets get transferred over. One of the other things that estate plan is important about, and this is just as relates to the will and testament, is one little key little thing in there. You can leave burial instructions. You can say who you want to have in charge, and you can guide a little bit as to who handles your remains, disposition of your remains. And the reason I say that is one of the big areas that we see disputes in families. It's what do we now do for is the how do we memorialize our loved ones' passing with a funeral? And you just kind of do what you think is best. Well, you can make that simple. You can map all that stuff out. And the last thing I'll say is, an estate plan is divided into two parts. One part deals with the person. The other parts deal with the person's assets and property. And so you want to make sure that plan is in place so that you are dealt with in your time of incapacity, and then that your property is dealt with as well.
So I hate to ask this question, but what actually happens when someone dies without a will?
Well, when somebody dies without a will, the first thing to figure out is who's in charge, and you don't have a will, and so you're at the hospital or the nursing home or wherever you are, and the hospital says you all need to call a funeral home, and that's the first hit that it hits everybody. Well, who's the person to start saying, do you go to Jones, do you go to Wilson, do you go where? And so that's one of the if you don't have a will, that's the first thing. The second one is, there's something, and I'll just use the state of Florida laws that I'm most familiar with. There's called testate and intestate. And testate means you have a will and it guides the process. Intestate means you default to the bare minimums required by law, and then the law dictates that. And your loved ones are subject to whatever the law says happens at that point in time.
What about the process? How long, I know after COVID, anything I've heard from people about the court system these days is that it's taking forever, a couple of years to kind of get through things. Is that the case? I know you probably can't talk to about, other states, but here in Florida, Can you address, is it taking a lot longer than maybe it used to?
I wouldn't say it's taking longer. What the issue really is, and I tell families all the time, if everybody works together and we all get along, it's going to be shorter. If somebody wants to show their butt and drag this out, well, it's going to take a lot longer and it's going to cost a lot more. But you can probate most estates, most normal estates, within a year. You can have some that go really quickly, that can be, down to 4 or 5 months. But I normally tell folks, expect to be about 9 months in the system. And I don't want to indict government workers. But after Thanksgiving, the court system grinds to a halt because everybody's using up those last few vacation days and, PTO days. And so things move a lot slower after Thanksgiving. So I tell people all the time, if we're going to get it done, we need to hustle and try to get it done before Thanksgiving, because after that, the court system really goes at a snail's pace because of manpower.
What about like estate taxing? Can estate planning actually help to minimize taxes you may have after, probating a will?
Yes, you can almost eliminate estate taxes in most estates. That's really not a major factor, because there are ways to move assets outside of the probate process. Probate is reserved for those assets which have not been transferred or don't have direct transfers in place upon someone's death. So let's take something simple. You have a vehicle. Someone has a vehicle. If you have another person's name on the title, Joe Smith and John Smith, when Joe Smith dies, the vehicle is still John Smith's. So I oftentimes will tell some of my elderly clients, listen, you might want to add one of your children's name to your vehicles. That way it never comes into probate. Financial accounts, life insurance, investment accounts, brokerage accounts, if you've got someone else's name on that account, and or the proper designated beneficiary or pay upon death designee, then that person's at that asset, it goes around probate. So probate is left with those assets that could not be transferred prior to the person passing away.
And when you say prior, I mean, so the person has to still be alive when they do that, just for clarity's sake.
Yeah, and so let's use a bank account or a brokerage account, a 401k. You have a pay upon death. At the instant that person passes away, those funds now belong to the beneficiary. They never come into the estate, so they're not subject to probate. And they just go right around. And if you're someone with significant assets, you need that in place so that that's already that never comes into probate. It's not subject to estate taxes. And you don't have that issue. And so most people, I tell them, and most financial institutions are very good about it. We just have to be responsive. The bank says, well, who do you want to put down as a beneficiary? I don't know. Let me go talk to my kids. I'll get back to you. The bank's like, well, tell us now so we have a name down so that we don't have we know who gets these funds if something happens to you.
And I think that's part of the problem with a lot of people is procrastination, poor planning, don't really think
Yes.
about it, or they think they have t all the time in the world, and then something happens and it's not in place.
And
So,
overthinking. The one that I run into a lot, people are like, well, I got four kids and two of them get along and one of them has got this weird spouse. How do I be fair and tell me what to do? And I'm like, no, it's up to you. And I tell them all the time, you don't have to be fair. You can do what you want, it's your stuff. Leave it to them or don't leave it to them or however you
Make
want
the
it. But it's you,
decision.
but that's the biggest thing I tell people is it's your stuff. You don't have to be fair. You don't owe everybody equality. You know the ones who you deserve and who don't, and it's okay. And I'll tell people all the time, I say, your kids don't like it, they ask me, I'm gonna tell them, live well, be a good person, and when you get to heaven, you can ask mama why she did what she did. But as far as I'm concerned, the paperwork is going to control what we do.
Right. So, Attorney Paris, I also wanted to ask you if you could kind of walk me through the probate process, because a lot of people find themselves in this position of having to, deal with the court system there, even when there's a will in place, still certain paperwork has to be filed. So what is, what are the bare minimums in terms of the process of what the expectation is? And if you could explain like what the like administrator or executor, are they the same? Are they different? Who are they? What do they do? And just kind of as quickly as you can, walk us through that process of what happens
Yeah.
if you have a will and you're going through the probate
So
process.
the executor and administrator are the same person. They're the same person as far as the administration of the estate process is. Okay. The person who executes the will sometimes is referred to as the executor. They're the person that, but in the probate process, the estate executor is the person now distributing the assets out as they go. So talk, as we talk about Florida, in most states, when a person passes away first, when you get a will and estate plan done, you get to keep the original documents. My first thing is do not leave your financial estate planning documents with a lawyer. The lawyer could go out of business, sell the law firm. I could run off a list of things that happen and nobody has any paperwork. No one knows even go look for the paperwork. And so you act as if there is no estate. The lawyer doesn't know the person may have passed away or not. And so no one even, so I tell people, keep your original documents. Most lawyers I keep in my office, I keep a set of copies to back us up if we need to get to that. So those documents need to be with your other important papers. That's the word I use. Take your estate plan, put it with your other important papers where it can be accessed in an emergency by the person you want to be in charge. And I tell them, don't tell everybody at church that there's a box in your closet with papers in it. If something happens to me, y'all go get it. Don't do that. Don't go to the family reunion and announce. In my attic, I've got a shoebox. All my stuff is up there, y'all. So if something happens to me, go get my stuff out. Don't do that. Go to the person that you want to be in charge only. Only. And say, listen, I've got a safe deposit box at this bank. Your name is on it. Something happens to me, go to the bank. They'll let you get my stuff out. Or I have a safe at the house. Under the bottom, taped to that safe is the combination. Something happens to me. Flip it over, get the combination, open it. My stuff is it's in there. It's in that box. And one of the things I'm telling people now is include the code to your phone so that somebody can open your phone also, because who knows what they may need to search or and I got a way to open phones that I'm going to share with people. If someone passed away, and I say, no, don't do that, but it works. So now we got the paperwork. Something happens to you, that responsible person, not your favorite person, and not who you want to be, but the person you know is going to handle your business, goes, gets out your will, gets what other important papers, and hopefully they'll be, go meet with the lawyer, and the lawyer will say, okay, here's what needs to be done right now. And one of those things that needs to be done is the will needs to be deposited with the clerk of court. The original will, because the court will only accept the original, and we don't want a what is it? What was the name? Aretha Franklin or a Prince situation, or well, nobody can find the will. You need the original will, or was it James Brown? They couldn't even get him in the ground, I don't think, for a while. You want the original, and the way that the courts in Florida protect that is you've got 10 days to deposit that with the court after the person passes. So you go deposit that. And the will just sits. Nobody reads it. Nobody looks at it. It just sits and waits until a probate administration is open, and then the will becomes effective at that point in time. And then there's some application you file in Florida. We file what are called petitions for administration. And depending on the level of assets, depends on which one you file. One could be a distribution without administration. That's where it's only a few hundred dollars in this state. The next level is summer administration, and that is where non-exempt assets are less than $75,000. And then the big one that really, you know, gets people is the formal administration, and that is for states over $75,000.
Mm-hmm. So really important to know where things are, to tell a particular family member that you want to be in charge where it is and how to access important documents and information. Because what happens after those 10 days that you said that, you know, in Florida you have to file, because it's probably different deadlines across the country.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, I've never had anybody punished for missing the 10 days. Mm-hmm. I've never had that issue come up where, you know, one of the issues I could see and where, let's say, there's a long delay. So there's a lot of fraud in probate. There's a lot of fraud because you've got a dead person who can't say what is or isn't. You'll be shocked at how many people, you know, run up credit cards, withdraw money from accounts, write checks to themselves, file false documents, taking real estate, you know, take titles of property and boats. You'd be shocked at how much of that is a huge amount of fraud. And so the idea of the early quick deposit is to secure the will. The other issue is to probate property, you need the original will, or a copy has to be what they call proved up. That's where someone like myself who drafted the will, or one of the witnesses, has to come to court and say, I was present when the will was executed. This is the document that I recall observing at that time. This is the official will. And then the court will accept that copy, but it's subject to challenge by other heirs. And so I tell people, you want to secure that will with the court system as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in this process, is everybody supposed to be informed, or do you have to like go to the court if you're a beneficiary and find out the information? Sometimes people get in this situation, they have no idea what the process is, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. And unfortunately, sometimes there are people in that process, like you said, that can be very corrupt that aren't really helping people, you know?
The first one is, I tell people, it's really nobody's business, right? I mean, it's really what you have, what you're doing, really. And I tell people, don't share with your heirs and beneficiaries what you left in your will, because you might decide to change that. Mm. And now they think, oh, well, grandmama said, you know, I'm getting her wedding ring. And then when grandma dies, grandma's already given that to another niece. And they're like, hey, grandma said I get to have that. Like, oh, grandma already gave it to me. You know, so don't tell people what you intend to do in your will. But part of the big issue is the information piece. You're right about that. So under Florida law, certain people are considered heirs of a deceased person, children and spouse, right? Mm-hmm. Those are considered the heirs, really. If there are no children, then the parents come in. Mm-hmm. So individual, adult, no children, your parents then become your primary heirs. Okay? Adult person, no children, no parents, your siblings then come in. Mm-hmm. Then if your siblings are deceased, then your siblings' children come in. They become your nephews and nieces. They come in. So it's kind of weird. It backs up and then it drops, goes out, and then it drops down, you know, to bring those folks in.
Yeah.
Step children have no heir rights. They have no heir rights. So people
unless you write them in, you're saying if
you've got a will and you write them into the will just like anybody else. So mm-hmm. one of the things you do in a estate plan is you name your spouse, if you have one, you name your children in your will. And I do what's called a disavow clause. My children are Mary, Billy, And I disavow all others who claim to be my children. That's so that we don't get any surprises. You know, that's we want to make sure who's out
Don't
there out. We don't need no. So we can, so we want to make sure we draw the line that people are out. That's the one component of it. Now, the beneficiary, the heirs of the estate, they get notice of all the activities in the estate. So once the responsible person, the administrator, the person representative, and the executive of the estate opens up the probate and takes action, they're required to notify all those people named as heirs. Mm-hmm. And we file a document in the proceeding with the petition for administration called an affidavit of heirship. And that is where someone who's executing the estate swears to the court, these are the named heirs, these are their addresses, and this is their relationship to the deceased. And then the court monitors to make sure they're properly notified through a process called formal administration, where they get notice and they have an objection period that follows whatever events occurring within the estate.
Mm-hmm. And if what happens if they weren't properly notified?
It invalidates the administration, and sure, either the court will catch it. You know, if they, you know, so let me just, so I would mail by certified mail, FedEx, UPS, some kind of verified method, documents to the heirs for them to look at, the petition, the affidavit. They'll come in and say, and I've had people come in and say, oh, no. This person right here, that's not my daddy's son. Mama, no, that's not my daddy's son. So we scratching them. And they will oppose. They oppose the affidavit of heirship. You
that's
know,
terrible.
You get people put in the family. You get people put out of the family. they get what's called formal notice, where I have to say to the court, Your Honor, on X date, by these means, I formally sent these people copies of all the documents, and here is the return receipt showing that it was delivered to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as of, they get 20 days to respond to that. So as we go through the process, you can imagine one of the things that kind of can run up the bill is postage. Because you're notifying these heirs of various things. So yeah, they get notified all the way through. And our courts in Florida, they are very, very considerate and generous about listening to family members come in and have objection to whatever they may have to say. They may not get what they want, but they'll listen to them.
Mm-hmm. But I know there can be a supervised administration and unsupervised. Does that apply to both of those ways in which a will can be, dealt with within the court system?
So in Florida, all probate is overseen by a judge. Mm-hmm. None of it goes to a magistrate or some other things do in the arena of probate, do like guardianship and things of that nature they will go into a supervised status. But all probate, it's only effective if a judge signs off on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to answer a few more questions about estate planning and how you can make sure that your assets and property are protected. We'll be back right after this.
A lot of things have come to a screeching halt due to COVID-19, but you should know that the court system in Tennessee is still open and holding in-person hearings for orders of protection and other types of abuse cases. If you have a hearing date, double-check on where your hearing will be held. If you need assistance on an order of protection or temporary restraining order, contact the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443 or visit our website at www.las.org.
Well, we're back and we're talking to Attorney Paris, who is giving us a wealth of information on estate planning and the whole probate process. And Attorney Paris, one of the things I also wanted to ask you, I know we've talked about protecting your assets and property. I wanted to ask, when we talk about property, about intellectual property, because back in the day, nobody had a Facebook or an Instagram or a Twitter or all these other accounts, and many people are using that to make a living, and a lot of people are becoming public figures. Should that be something that you consider as part of your property, in terms of how that's handled? Because I know people who have passed and their Facebook pages are still up and running. So, how's that being handled?
So that's considered what's called an intangible personal property. It doesn't have a physical, it's not a piece of jewelry or a car or a boat. It's an intangible piece of property, and it's dealt with just like tangible pieces of property with the person leaving instructions. And sometimes that's a professional consideration that they need to think about, because you may bring in a personal representative who doesn't have that skill set, but they need to monetize that asset. And so one of the things I normally would tell people is, you want to leave instructions what to do with this particular asset to convert it into cash, per se, if you want to do that, or if you're going to try to keep it operational. Probate is a transfer process. It is to transfer ownership out of a deceased person's ownership into a live person's ownership. And so if you can find a live person that's willing to put money onto it, or is going to utilize it, it should be treated just like a tangible piece of property and done so. And so that's normally what I recommend, people that have that kind of a presence. You just go down the list. And what we do when we do an estate plan, we have a planning document that captures all the stuff that could potentially impact your estate. And so we see that, we have that discussion with the person, and it could be something, weird, in wherein you create another holding entity to actually own those intangible assets. So when you pass away, they don't even come into your estate. They belong to that entity, and then that entity can just deal with them as appropriate.
And I didn't mention this, but also, if you, let's say you have a business, and would that be considered part of the will, or does that need to be handled totally separately and aside from an individual's will?
So, my preference is to keep businesses out of an estate, because an estate is not designed to run a business. You want to ruin a let's take some home business. Let's say someone has an accounting business, right? By the time we get that thing through the probate process, the business may be ruined. So normally what I tell people in those cases, you have a company set up. It's an Inc. or an LLC. You need to write into your operating documents and your bylaws, transition instructions for the asset, and a way that your estate receives benefit. You let's just make up something. You have an LLC, so you have an operating agreement, and in that operating agreement, you identify two other members. And upon, you would say something like, upon my death, member so and so will pay to my estate X dollar amount in exchange for releasing all rights to the company. Well, the company's out and gone and do what it's going to do. Money is what we want in the estate. I'll tell you, I tell people all the time, I don't want to have to deal with getting rid of your couch and your cat and getting rid of your stuff. That's problematic. The best things you want in an estate is cash. Because it's easier to handle, it's easy to document, it's easy to track. When we start getting rid of dish collections and plates from all over the world and those things kind of thing, it becomes a much more difficult process. And that's when you see those estate sales, where somebody's put out a sign basically say, look, come in here and buy all this, who wants some of this stuff, because they're trying to convert the stuff into cash.
So I think that might be a reason one wants to update their will and estate plan regularly. So how often should one think about, or when should one think about, up oh, might be time to update the will? you know?
So if you, let's frame the estate plan and let's talk about a basic estate plan. A basic estate plan has a medical surrogate designation. Anyone over 18 needs to designate another person who can make medical decisions. Mom and dad, it really can't, after 18, they have no right to decide what to do with you in the case of a car accident. The doctors are polite and they'll talk and all that, but they don't have a right to say what happens to you if you're incapacitated. You need a medical surrogate to say that, for sure. A power of attorney. A durable power of attorney. And what's the difference in a durable and just a general? A durable survives your incapacity. You're incapacitated, somebody needs to go talk to your job or Social Security or find your nursing home. Whatever. You need a power of attorney so they can actually speak for you when you cannot.
Right.
The third one is, and this is a big one now, is a living will. My mama called it the plug-in, plug-out document. Do you want the plug to stay in? Do you want the plug to come out? That's cut blank. And there are certain conditions in which it can only be done in stage, vegetative state, with the law and the medical professionals provide that. That gets us now, we got three things that deal with the person in an estate plan. Medical surgery, your health care. Power of attorney, your administrative decisions in your life. Living will, it deals with you. You're gone, now we get down to the last will and testament. So now, when do I need those documents? 18 years old, your kid's going to college, you need to get a power of attorney at the minimum. That's at least so you can get the grades. You know, when you call up, they want the grades, they say, well, you can't get no grades. Yes, I can. Power of attorney at 18, at least right. That. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Right. yeah. And I do them all the time. I tell my client, hey, he's going up to college, call me.
We need to get that grade. You know, we used to deal with FERPA, you know, and have to be like, we cannot give you that information, ma'am. If you'd like, you can, you know, ask your child to give you a copy.
So you're starting your estate plan there. That's the starting document. Let's say you're now a mid-20s person. You're single. You're starting to get some assets. You got a little money in the bank. You need a basic estate plan. So if something happens, mom and daddy can take care of all your stuff and get it done. At least that. Or you got that special person. You want to make sure they get a little something when you go, you know, because you think y'all are moving in the right direction. You know, you want to put that in paperwork, you know. And if you're a single parent, if you're a single parent, you need an estate plan so that we've got instructions on how to handle things for the model child. So we got that first estate plan. Boom, you get married. You need to update your estate plan. You have children. You need to update your estate plan. You get divorced. You need to update your estate plan. One of your children become adults. You may want to change what you put in your estate plan. You may put things in to deal with them as kids and provide for their welfare and education. Now they're adults and they're out of college. You don't need that stuff. You need to update it. One of the spouse passes away. Update your estate plan, or you get divorced. Or you're in the process of getting divorced. There ain't nothing worse than somebody calling me like, you've got everything, you know, tied up with this person and you hate their guts now, but you didn't get your estate plan done. So when people say they're breaking up, as soon as you hit that stage, because if something happened to you and she's still on all the paperwork to decide what happens, the plug may come out sooner than you may have thought it was going to come out. You know, so I tell people major event, major life events is usually when you want to change your state plan.
Reminds you of a Diary of a Mad Black Woman. That's what happened there, isn't it?
Yeah. You're exactly
that
not, right.
That pretty. It's like, what are you doing here? Oh, okay.
Like, so I tell you, if you're in that situation, you know, now let me say this, though, is the laws typically protect spouses. So one spouse can't disinherit another spouse. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, you know, you've heard the story, you know, the man dies, the woman goes to the bank and finds out, well, everything was left to a secretary, you know, or the house had been left to the secretary, or those kind of, You cannot disinherit a spouse. So it has to be equitable. Also, as it pertains to minor children are provided for under Florida's homestead law, meaning they automatically inherit a right to homestead property. Mm-hmm. So if they're not of the marriage, so outside child, so listen to this. Married to someone, they have an outside child. That child's a minor. Will or no will?
Yeah, they would be provided.
That child's coming in.
I mean, is there a percentage there that would be what you're talking about? Or when you say they're provided for, like, I guess, would that be normal child support or what would that be?
So the main asset that they have rights to is the homestead property. So if a person dies intestate without a will, outside child, the child inherits with the surviving spouse the property. The spouse can choose to take half jointly with the child, or the spouse can take a life estate. And when the spouse passes away, then the child would inherit the property. Mm-hmm. That's okay. A non-marital child.
What'd you say?
A child that's not from the marriage.
Oh, okay.
It's an outside child. Now, in today's world, it's rare now that you see a family where there aren't outside children. People are blending families off. So you need an estate. You need to get an estate plan in place to clean all this, to line all that up, mm-hmm. you know, so that everybody is taken care of the way that they should.
Yeah. So going back to the administrator or executor, if you will, you said they're one and the same earlier.
Personal representatives.
Personal representatives. Yes. I wanted to know what exactly would happen if you find that that person has not performed their duties in a responsible manner? Because I know typically the courts, once they've made the decision, they side with the, I believe I've read that they side with the person who is named as beneficiary, I mean, not beneficiary, as administrator, you know, the majority of the time. So what happens if they're not doing, everything is filed late or they're not filing anything at all, they're not notifying people of anything, what actually can happen in those cases?
So again, just referencing Florida, one of the things I said earlier was that the courts in Florida, they are very open to listening to heirs or beneficiaries who have an issue with the administration. So if you don't like administration in Florida, you can literally just write the judge a letter. Hey, judge, something ain't right, and we need you to get this organized. The judge is going to call a hearing, have everybody come in and say, okay, I got this letter. What's going on? And they'll listen to the person, say what they got to say. Oftentimes, it's just a misunderstanding of what is and isn't and some of that, and it can be explained or whatnot, or it may be more substantive. So when a personal representative is being appointed, they have to take an oath of office for themselves. They take an oath, and that oath is to the court. That's the first thing. That brings them under the jurisdiction of the court as a person, that they can be held personally responsible by the judge. Then the second element is you can be required to post a bond. You know, so-and-so files a probate for mama. Everybody knows hey, this family member is a little shady. So you write the judge and say, judge, we want this person to post a bond. And the judge can come in and say, okay, well, we're going to require you to post, you know, a $25,000 or $50,000 bond to make sure if some money shows up missing, we can go to the bond company, get the money back, or assets turn up missing, and the bond company can come after you and deal with you. So that's another way that there's protection in there as well. Kind of like they're making Donald Trump put up that bond in his case in New York to ensure that when this thing is over, and the beautiful thing about a bond is the insurance company will pay it. So, so a bond company comes in, guarantees the person, and the bond is based off that person's credit rating. So they're going to pull that person's credit score They can't be a felon. So even though mama left her favorite son in charge, if he is a hot mess, he's got a felony and got bad credit and, you know, repossessed, you know, cars and foreclosures, the court's going to reject him as the person representative or to be the administrator of the estate. And then they're going to entertain somebody else. And at that point in time, they will either take the person the majority of the heirs want. You know, there are five heirs, and three heirs come in and say, well, our brother Johnny, we don't trust brother Johnny, and here's why, and he doesn't qualify. The court will then, well, who do y'all want? And if they come forward another person, the court will appoint that person.
Mm-hmm. So in talking about the will itself, what are some of the valid or the legal requirements for like a valid will?
So the main two things for a will is signed by two witnesses who also sign the will. They see you sign it, and then they're in Florida, and most of the states I've dealt with, there is particular language that needs to be in the will. This whole idea that on my deathbed, I can dictate to somebody what I want to happen, and I sign it, and that's what they're going to follow, is not true. There's certain requirements, and one of the big ones is it needs to have the two subscribe, what they call subscribing witnesses. And then on top of that, if you're going to submit that, the witnesses need to be available. Well, that's not realistic. You know, when you pass away, who can go find the witnesses and bring them to court and say, yes, I was there, I witnessed it. So there's an affidavit that you attach to the will stating, I was there as a witness, I witnessed the other witnesses sign, and this is the will that I was there for. And that needs to be notarized. Mm-hmm. If it's notarized, the will is considered what they call self-proving. It stands on its own. We've got a statement from the witnesses. We've got the witnesses' signatures. And it's properly dated and whatnot. Then that will stand. So that's the bill. But this idea, you can't do it. People tell me all the time, oh, no. Talk to Leroy, Ray Ray, and Pookie, because she told all of them together what she want to have done. And I got an email. You know, grandmama sent me an email and it says this, it is really that carrying the name. So you need those requirements. And that's what makes me so nervous, Celeste, about people going online, getting these things, trying to get these things done.
Right.
You worked your whole life to build these assets, mm-hmm. right? You worked your whole life. You know, it's nothing for an average person of $1 million estate. You throw in their house. You know those $100,000 cars everybody's driving. You know some investments, a 401k, some money from the drop program, or whatever it may be. You can get to $1 million pretty easy, and you're not going to spend a few hundred or maybe a thousand or so to tie that up in a knot, put a bow on it.
Some people just don't think about that. Like, well, you know, what is going to happen? Or they think they'll get to it later, you know, unfortunately, yeah. A lot of procrastinators. But going back to the minor children and the protection of those children, does somebody need to be named in the will that would look after the children, you know, like especially if it's a minor, like, if there's no other parent, like, you know, who would the children go to? You know what I mean?
So wills only deal with assets. Children are considered liabilities. So the will can't move the kids around. So okay. That's a separate process, but you can have a preference.
Okay. So are you saying that preference should be mentioned in the will?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right now, in the event that I pass away, it is my preference that my children be raised and placed in custody of my brother, so-and-so. Okay, mm-hmm. Boom. That's what your preference is. Yeah. You pass away, they go check out, your brother shows up, your brother's a mess, he doesn't have stable housing, you know, he's got a lot of drama going around him. The court's going to say a separate court of guardianship now. because the probate court doesn't deal with determining the guardian for the children. The kids go through a guardianship process, and that guardianship process will look back at the will. Oh, who did they leave? Do they want? And that's only if both parents are gone. Mm-hmm. If one parent's still remaining, that parent is automatically the legal guardian for the child as a parent. That's a right as a parent. If both are gone, then there's a guardianship process where the court looks at who you want, and it turns out that's, you know, that person's qualified, and there's no, you know, real reason not to go to your preference. Sometimes you have a situation where that person's unavailable and now somebody else steps in. So my brother's unavailable. My sister steps in. She's never had kids. She's got a nice home. Her and her husband would love to raise the kids. They keep them every summer. The court's going to listen to that and probably give that, you know, consideration before they're released into an open system of, you know, whoever might want to take on the responsibility.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to kind of go back to the healthcare directives that you might want to have in place when it comes to important end of life decisions, because I personally have had an experience with my mother back in 2012. I was living in Tennessee at the time, and she ended up going into a coma. Before she went into the coma, she signed a DNR. While she was in the coma, they were like, she needs a pacemaker, but she signed a DNR. So it was a really sticky situation, you know, but they ended up giving her the pacemaker, and she lived many, you know, about 10 more years. But
wow,
you know, like, please explain why it's so important to have those healthcare directives and when you can put those in place. Can you do that while you're in the hospital or at the hospital?
So the core issue is capacity. Minor children are theoretically do not have capacity to make legal decisions. So they can't sign one. That's why at 18, now they can. Also, the law is just murky about who has ultimate responsibility for making decisions for a sick person. And it's tough to overcome. So you have this kind of a blending of family with the medical professionals and hospital administration. Because the technocrats come in and say, hey, here's a technical component to this. So I would presume that at some point in time with the DNR, they wrote in the records somewhere for your mom, right? You know, this is not a resuscitation. This is an extension of care. And that gives the legal basis for them to go in. But they couldn't write down, her daughter Celeste said, put this pacemaker in. Mm-hmm. Because you have no authority without that healthcare surrogate designation. So mm-hmm. So that's very important to clean all that up. We all have that one family member that shows up at the hospital, makes a big fuss, talks loud, is just domineering, right, but may not be most rational or reasonable person. You don't want that person pissing off all the hospital people.
Right. And
you want somebody that can come in and say, here it is. This is the goal. And so it's very important for the family structure as well. Because everybody's looking at everyone, what she be doing, what, you know, mama, what mama want, what do you think mama would want, what does mama want, will mama want that surgery, well, mama's never going to walk again, but mama, and you're trying to figure out and deal with the emotion of what you, it is, so you have to designate someone who you know in that moment will have a clear head, can make and guide right, the decision making. And it should be done, you know, like I said, it's a core piece of estate planning. I'll have people call me and say, listen, I want a will. And I say, well, I don't do wills without these other documents. I won't do it. Because your family's going to call me and say, we found a will with your name on it, but we need a power of attorney, or we need this, or we need that. Where is it? And I got to say, well, I don't have it. And sometimes I'll tell people, fine, I'm throwing this in. Here's what the charge is. When your heart hits you, send me my money. But I'm putting this in the paperwork, so that we don't have that issue. Because once we're stuck, we can't fix it then. And right. I'll say this, I am not a proponent of DNRs. Hospitals include them routinely, particularly with our elderly people, to put those, you know, fill those out. And I'm not a fan of those. If you've got an estate plan, you've got responsible people, they can handle the moment that's needed and take care of stuff. So that's one of the, I'm always cautious about DNRs, and they are standard. If you're getting surgery, you're getting DNR handed to you.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, right? When she thought it was when she signed it. We're like, oh my goodness, you know? And I mean, but it is an individual decision. So if you have those directives in place when you're in a right frame of mind and you've signed off on those things, that's just something to talk about, I think, very seriously with your family. And because, you know, if you don't, if you have somebody who all of a sudden is in that position of making that decision, say, to pull the plug, I mean, because you didn't put what needed to be put in place, you know, anything could happen. So it's better. If you plan to fail, you know, like you need to.
It's life changing. On a personal note, I had my older brother was in a very serious accident in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Life support, the whole deal. You know, we fly out there, we're with him, and ultimately I end up staying with him there, you know, through the process. And he had to be, you know, taken off life support. And you talk about a gut-wrenching moment. I'm 22, 23, standing there going, hey, man, I hope I'm getting this right, you know, but, you know, here's the deal. And it would have been so much easier with prior instructions left. You know, as you heard me just say, that moment has never left me. You know, I could replay that any minute you need me to play out with all the doctors saying as I stood there. Paperwork's in place. Everybody knows, hey, look, this is what grandmama wanted. Here we're going to go with or not, you know. And so I encourage people, there's a very robust estate planning industry around. Go talk to somebody. I've never had two situations that were the same. There are always things that are individualized, and it's not really. Judging from the cars that a lot of people I see driving, you can afford an estate plan. Go get the information and make things easier on your family on the back end. And if you do that, you know, the system is not that complicated. People are terrified of probate. If people have done their what they need to do, it's not that complicated a process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Attorney Paris, this has really been eye-opening and, man, just such a wealth of information you are. I thank you so much for coming on today and sharing this and taking your time to share this with people. If someone would like more information or to do a consultation with you, how would you prefer that they get in touch with you?
Easily. I mean, so we have a website. It's the Law Office of Clinton Paris. If you put Clinton and Paris together, it's unique. You're going to find me, but the website is parislawoffice.com is our website, parislawoffice.com, or you can Google my name, Clinton Paris Attorney. That's another way to find me. My phone number is 813-413-7924. That's 813-413-7924. That's another way that you can find me. But I'm well represented in social media and Facebook and some other places. So it's not that hard to find us. But any lawyer you want to go talk to. Yeah, I just want to make sure people, please, you know, and it's much cheaper. When I quote prices for estate planning and I quote price for probate, people are in shock at you're 3-4 times the cost when it comes to probating an estate.
Yeah. Wow. Great information. Thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. So anytime you have a question, feel free to reach out.
Will do. Will do. Well, that's all the time we have for now. We'll be back with more of the Celeste Stein Show in 2 weeks. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to my channels on YouTube and BBS Radio if you like what you're hearing. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.